Thank you guys so much for coming out to Dearborn Open Mic for this installment. Today is Juneteenth or June 19th, which marks the... Okay, I'm good now. Sorry, brain fart. So basically, Juneteenth is 2 years after the Emancipation Proclamation, in which a lot of slaves in the United States didn't know they were free. And so the government had to do extra things, or state governments, to get these people free. And, you know, today is a great day to celebrate. When I think about the plight of African Americans in this country and the overlap of solidarity of people of color and how gross the social fact of racism exists in this place, I think about joy, and I think about me as an artist, or just artists in general, and how it's our job not only to be aware of our surroundings and conscious, but also to celebrate and be filled with joy and let joy move us. Because what do we have if we don't have joy? Also, if you guys are interested in learning more about the plight of African Americans, please read The Meaning of Freedom by Angela Davis, and about the prison system and how it still over-incarcerates Black and brown bodies. And to open the space today, I want to read this poem by the poet Lucille Clifton, and it's called Won't You Celebrate With Me? She's also a very prolific African-American poet and one of my absolute favorites. She talks about resistance of Black folk through joy, obviously, and through family and just everyday things. And it's very beautiful. Won't You Celebrate With Me by Lucille Clifton. Won't you celebrate with me what I have shaped into a kind of life? I had no model. Born in Babylon, both non-white and woman. What did I see to be except myself? I made it up here on this bridge between starshine and clay. My one hand holding tight my other hand. Come celebrate with me that every day something has tried to kill me and has failed. And thank you for that. And now I'll be introducing Wissam Shafadeen. He's one of the great organizers of Dearborn Open Mic. He writes poems, and he's going to give a really interesting talk about Arab revolutions. So please warmly, you know, applaud whatever you do at these things.
Hello, everyone. So I'm actually going to speak about one revolution, not Arab revolutions. And it's really in commemoration of the great Arab revolution, the great Arab revolt. They call it the Thawra al-Arabiya or Thawra al-Arabiya al-Kubra, which took place in June 10 of 1916. I feel it's very important. I'm going to explain why. But before that, just a little introduction is that, so the mission of the Dearborn Open Mic is to create a space for expression, artistic, intellectual expression of the city of Dearborn and its diversity. And one of the themes that is presented through this mic is the identity. So as an ethnic city, as a diverse city, the topic of identity as an Arab American identity or any other identity, how do we express our identity? How do we recognize and perceive our identity? So this talk has to do with that. And something else is the talks are not really, you know, we are in an age that there is no more need for anyone to give us any kind of information. You know, the information, there is a flow of information that is tremendous out there. The issue is there is an overflow of information, and deciphering what is authentic from what's not authentic is probably the only struggle. But as far as information, if someone has a question, it is really a self-effort to answer that question. So the mic is not really a place where I'm going to read for you information that you can easily find by yourself. But it's really about perspective. How do we put this information into a perspective that actually affects our life, or it has to do with our life, or sometimes reflection, personal reflections or academic reflections. If we have more professional people, they can have their academic or professional reflection on certain type of information. So I'm going to basically bring the Arab revolt. Of course, there's no time. This is 10 to 15 minutes talk. So there is no time to go over that very, very extensive history that happened, out of which all the Arab words and the Arab people are influenced till today. I mean, it's just the overflow of that incident, of that revolt. So I'm not going to explain the incident or go over it, the event, but I'm going to reflect on it. How does it relate to us today? So just in summary, so if you're not aware, to be aware of what we're talking about, is that in 1916, so Arab identity, so basically it's interesting, an Arabic identity is not an ethnic identity. It is not a race, it's not a racial identity. It's more of a self identity. So if someone perceives or identifies himself or herself as an Arab, then they're an Arab. There's nothing to negate that. The history of Arabs goes back to 900 BC. Some claim even further than that. There is writings, Arabic calligraphy, very primitive one that was in the first century BC. Found, and Arabs basically they were mostly Bedouin nomads that have concentrated in or lived in areas, roamed in the areas between what's today Saudi Arabia all the way to Mauritania in Africa, North Africa. These are the areas where historically the Arab nomads were mostly concentrated in the Arabian Peninsula, which is today Saudi Arabia, Yemen, Oman, UAE, Qatar, Bahrain, Kuwait, and the Levant area, which is today Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, Jordan, Palestine. So the these two areas are where most Arabs they lived in. And the Arabic history has exploded after the birth of Islam, because Islam was the first force that have united Arabs together. And it had a philosophy, it had a curriculum that wanted to spread. It has an expansive ideology, and it organized armies, and there were Islamic conquests. And Islam, within 100 years, that's in the 7th century, within 100 years, it actually expanded all the way to North Africa going west, and to China going east, and India, the South Indies. Arabs, as people who have been the first Muslims, Arabs have ruled. Now, I'm not commenting on the positives and negatives of that era and the positives and negatives of Islamic conquest, etc. That's a whole different topic. But Arabs had ruled at that time in the name of Islam during three dynasties: the Rashidis dynasty, the Umayyads dynasty, and the Abbasids dynasty. When the Mughals occupied Baghdad in 1258, that was the fall of the Abbasid Empire. So since 1258, Arabs have not ruled until the modern time. So, and the consequences of the 1258 conquest of Baghdad, so you know that is the golden era of Islam and the golden era of Arabs. That's where 90% of the basis of sciences were established during that era. During, it's called the golden age, the late Abbasids stage in history, where Baghdad was the center of the world, and while Europe was living in the darkness of the dark ages. And there was also the Arabs also ruled during, so after the fall of Baghdad with the attack and the conquest of the Mughals, there were small countries popping up and disappearing. One of which is the Fatimid dynasty, which was basically centered in Egypt from 909 to 1171. Just to give you an example how that affects us, the Fatimid, the Abbasid, the Rashid, the Rashidi Khalifa, and the Umayyads. These four have had flags. The Umayyads had a white flag, the Rashidi had a green flag, the Fatimid had a green flag, the Abbasid had a black flag, and the Arabic flags today are made out of these colors because of that. This is how history kind of continues itself. So once after the Mughals destroyed the Islamic civilization and stopped it in 1258, there were smaller countries, there were continuous war, and it took a while before one of these smaller countries, smaller dynasties, every dynasty that would pop up with different ethnicities, they would try to take over the Islamic world again, establish Khilafah, they would fail. And, you know, it continues to pop up, expand, shrink, until one of them actually succeeded in taking over the Islamic world again and creating one unified empire, which is the Ottoman Empire. So the Ottoman Empire started in 1299 and continued till 1922. So during the Ottoman time, the Arabic identity was suppressed. The style of the Ottomans is that they would draft all the young men to the army. They would send them to different parts of the world. So they would take Albanians, let them fight in the east, and take Arabs, let them fight in the west. And they kept moving people around to quell any revolution, to have possibility of creating any resistance to them. They also suppressed language. So the Turkish language was the official language, and they suppressed all other languages. When a scholar or a star shines in any place of the Islamic world at that time, they would move them to Istanbul, to the Constantinople at that time, also the capital of the Islamic world, and they would be kept there where they can, you know, the knowledge basically was centralized. There was the most extreme example of centralization in history, where nothing is allowed to take place except in the capital of the Ottoman Empire. There's a lot of details, but I'm just giving an outline here to come. So for 400 years, during the Ottoman time, the Arabic identity was completely suppressed. We had actually a death of Arabic writing and expression in all kind of forms. Up until the weakness of the Ottoman Empire, which started to grow the sentiments of the Arab, basically independence from the Ottoman rule. So how I'm going to relate this to us here. So these sentiments, the one event in history that has trickled down and influenced all other events in seeking independence is the American Revolution. The American Revolution was one of the most inspirational incidences in history, basically taking away a king and giving the rule to the people. That was one of the earliest successful examples of that. It was very inspirational. It inspired one of the most important revolutions in history in the modern time, which is the French Revolution. Colonialism started. That was a nightmare for the Arabic world, but at the same time, it freed them from the Ottomans. So when the British, the French, and then the British took over Egypt, that was the first time where a print press in Arabic came to Egypt. And the Egyptians were allowed to travel and get educated. So they started going to Paris, to the Sorbonne, to get educated. Actually, the start of what's called the Arabic Nahda, the Arabic Renaissance, started with Mustafa al-Tahtawi, who went to Sorbonne and came back. All this intellectuality taking place in Paris, people who had multiple revolutions and rewrote constitutions three times, and they're creating all this the design of the new word. So it was very inspirational. He came back and started the intellectual Arabic Renaissance, Mustafa Tathawi in Egypt. The first Arabic press in the Asian Arabic world was brought by an American missionary to Beirut. So with these two print presses in Beirut and Iskandaria, the Arabs started to write again. And there was a flourishing of Arabic intellectuality. And there was sentiments for Arabic independence since the 1909 from Arabic learned people in Syria. When I say Syria at that time, Syria meant all the Levant area, mostly Iraq and Syria. Syria meant Syria, what's today Syria, Jordan, Palestine, and Lebanon. Like Palestine was called South Syria, basically. So the intellectuals in these areas, the intellectuals in Egypt, and the intellectuals in Paris were all talking about independence. Everyone was talking about independence, about nationality, about the right for self-determination. Zionism was founded for the same purpose. Countries were, revolutions in Europe were starting right and left to establish self-identity. So that basically culminated into the secret Arabic organizations within the Ottoman Empire seeking freedom. I'm going to come to the point. Two things and I'm going to finish. When you can go back and read about the Arab Revolt. On DearbornBlog.com, we just posted a documentary of three parts. Each part is about an hour, about specifically the Arab Revolt, a very important part of our history. And the reason is that was, in modern time, the only time where there was a movement for Arabs to self-identify. It was very difficult within the Ottoman harsh rule. And then when the Ottomans left, there was colonialism right away. So it was crushed by very big struggles. And it was, the colonialism left with one of two options, either a puppet government and splitting the countries in a way that they will always be divided ethnically and etc., or puppet governments or monarchies that were taken over by military coups that created dictatorships. So we have no manifestation of democracy yet since the Arabic Revolt in the Middle East. There's a lot of details to comment on this because I'm talking about 22 countries and a long history. But the two events are this, and I'm ending with that, is that in 1916 the revolt started, but before that, in 1909, this Arab al-Jamiyat al-Arab al-Fatat, the young Arabs, a secret organization, most when they would discover their communication, they would be executed immediately and they would be hanged in the middle of the cities by the Turkish army. It was complete secret. But I want to tell you something, that during that time, there was a very strong immigration. That's the first wave of immigration of Arabs to America. Arabs who came to America, many of them were members of these organizations. They have national and they have pan-Arabic intentions and aspirations. And they worked hard in this country, especially that America was a warm environment for the freedom of people and for nationalizations and for the right of people to determine their future. They were very strong supporters of that philosophy at that time. So they found a great place for this to take place, and they organized. Now, there is a book by Dr. Hani Bawardi, who's a professor at University of Michigan, about Arab Americans, and he has documents and proofs of all that communications, even though some of them were secretive. So they had like different names used for to cover their names. So the Arab Americans were part of that. They saw America as a place where they can come and work hard to support the freedom that's going to take place in the Middle East. And in 1913, there was the first Arab Congress that was organized by Arab students in the Sorbonne. Have you ever heard of the first Jewish Congress that took place? And the first, there's so many nations that were trying to gain an identity without having land. Arabs acted the same way because their lands were under control of other entities. So they were acting like they don't have a land. So they created the first Arab Congress, and it met in Paris. And delegations of 26 from 26 areas came, one of which is from the United States. Arab Americans traveled from the United States. They didn't identify as Arab Americans yet. That word wasn't used until 1939. But they gathered in Paris 1930s, first Arab Congress 1913, and they had a determination that we need to have a state where Arabic aspirations and identity would be free. We would have the right for self-determination. Unfortunately, World War I happened afterwards, and everything, you know, went into chaos. Most Arab Americans in America, they actually went to war. Eventually, they participated in the war in the American army. And the second event is that in 1909, this Arab Fatat group, which made of Arab intellectuals, they met with a very strong Arabic family who were ruling of Mecca and Hijaz, which is the Sharif Hussein family. So his son, the King Faisal, he went to represent the Hijaz area, and they met in Syria secretly, and they signed an agreement that was in 19... They signed an agreement together in 1915, May 23rd, called the Damascus Agreement, the Damascus Protocol. Now, I claim that this protocol, this agreement, is the only self-determined Arab document that we have. And since 1915, Arabs never came independently and created something that represents their just their aspirations, not influenced by any colonialism or any other factor. So that Damascus Protocol written in 1915 is small. It had to be small because he had to hide it in his socks, because if they're caught, everyone would be executed by the Ottomans. That Damascus Agreement in 1915, which said, okay, you know, this area, they exactly named the area from Halab to, from Aleppo to Aden, is this area is our Arabic land, and we have the right to rule our land, and we are going to rule our land. Of course, to make a long story short, the British and French, they loved the idea because it was weakening of the Turks, it was weakening of the Ottoman Empire, so they supported it by money and by weapons until it succeeded in 1920, and King Faisal entered into Damascus, and with the Arabic flag, which is another story. But then he found out that there was actually another secret agreement by the Prime Minister of Britain, Sykes, and the Prime Minister of France, Pico, Sykes-Pico agreement, that was signed way back in 1917. That's 1920. They discovered that there was this secret agreement that already have divided the Arabic world between France and Britain. And that was the big shock, and basically the Arabic world went into chaos again, entered into the colonial stage with a struggle for independence that didn't manifest until the 50s, 60s, and 70s, leaving the Arabic countries with puppet governments or constitutions based on ethnic division or monarchies based on families loyal to the colonial powers. And the Arabic world still struggles today with the same issues. It's 2019, and you see the chaos on everyday basis. The Arab Spring did not come to life last time. There is a talk now of about Arab Spring 2.0, starting from Sudan, and you see what's happening in Sudan, and forbidding by all the international powers to any rise of self-determination by the people, because once, it's like dominoes, once one falls, all the Arabic countries will fall, because they were all based on an agreement of two gentlemen and very, very shallow historical basis for the current status. We, Arab Americans, we played a part before, and we can still play a part in helping the manifestation of the Arabic identity. And when I say Arabic identity, I don't mean supremacy or anything. It's just the right of people to be free and to determine for their own, their, you know, how to live in their lands. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Wissam, for that. It's really interesting to see what the meaning of freedom looks like across intersectional histories. One man's homeland is, you know, could be a prison for them, but when they leave somewhere and the people that are still here are having a hard time, it's a place for opportunity. So we're going to segue into our visual artist, Maha Hamayed. She's a Lebanese-American and a Dearborn native. She's a recent graduate of Wayne State's Fine Arts program with a major in photography, and her work focuses around surrealism, which I love. Please look, everybody take a minute and just look at her cool photos everywhere around here. Her medium, as you can see, is collage and photography, and her work has been showcased at the Argus Museum in Ann Arbor and at a couple Wayne State exhibits. So please warmly welcome Maha to the stage.
Hello. Yeah, again, my name is Maha Hamayed. I'm a Lebanese-American who was born and raised in Dearborn, Michigan. As a first-generation American, I've been influenced by my cultural background, finding that the contrast of the American culture I was raised in and the Lebanese culture that my family still adheres to are often almost completely opposite. This combination of cultures leads me to really think about how I fit into the world as well as the way that has impacted my worldview. I find that I often look at things in a way that is perhaps different than many other people, especially having traveled to various countries and being immersed within these cultures in a deeply personal way. I graduated from Fordson High School, and finishing my high school education, I was unsure of my future path and lean towards a more mundane career of teaching, although it was in the fine arts department. While pursuing my career in art education, it became apparent in my heart that I was not involved into a career working with dozens, if not hundreds, of students. Once I became aware of my love for the arts, I set out to explore more of my career options. And after enrolling in my first photography class, I realized that the openness of options within the field of photography allowed me the flexibility to earn a living as well as explore the creative side of myself. I grew up always being a visual learner and admired all forms of arts. Photography gave me the freedom to dabble in different mediums and experiment with techniques that I was unfamiliar with. The type of work I enjoy creating most are photography-based works as well as mixed media, digital composites, or creating analog collages from found images and seeing what works best. So the photos on the right-hand side are all 35mm photographs I took with a film camera, developed them, and then I collaged over. And then the pictures on the left are all analog collages that I made with found images. The uncertainty of using found images is always a fun and meditative process for me. It allows me to experience through the trials of error of combining images, unlike my digital work, where it's more idea-based. I find most of my materials for collage in old magazines that I have purchased at secondhand bookstores. I tend to use a lot of vintage National Geographic and Playboy, along with other magazines from the 60s and 70s. I enjoy the nostalgic feeling you get from using black and white photos, but I contrast them with bold colors, patterns, and designs to balance them out. My main goal for my works is to convey feeling of detachment from self, taking the viewer to a place that exists only in my mind. In a time where the world is so oversaturated with photos, I enjoy the challenge of making things that will keep the attention of the viewers. I often focus around surreal themes, dreamlike scenarios, questioning sexuality and religion, along with existential themes dealing with life and the possibility of what comes after death. I play with the scales of things in my work to seem off in my photos and compositions, making them unnaturally bigger or smaller in comparison to the surrounding subjects. I have a dark sense of humor and like to incorporate that into my work as well, making it more playful and relatable in a sense. I try to keep in mind and compose my work around shapes, primarily circles and triangles, to keep the image flowing. My pieces generally have bright and contrasting color schemes in comparison to real life. As an artist, I draw inspiration from many places, whether it's my dreams and experiences or other surrealist and Dada artists, such as Salvador Dali, Francis Bacon, Max Ernst, Leonora Carrington, and Hannah Hope. Yeah.
Which one's your favorite that you brought?
My favorite piece, I have the homage to Dali on, I think it's all the way on the left with the butterfly and the naked lady. Yeah, I like that a lot.
Is there any particular reason why you like it?
I made it as a response to his Rose painting. Yeah, so I did that and I just respect his work a lot. Yeah.
Anybody have any questions for Maha?
Yes.
How did you stumble upon the surrealism?
First, studying art history in school, and then I wasn't passionate about art until I started making collages, and I don't know, it's just easy and anyone can do it, and it's just fun, playing around with different things in different environments. But yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Maha, for sharing your art. It's so phenomenal. Follow her on Instagram. Everybody go up to her after and ask her what it is, because her work is so good. I'm just letting everybody know in the audience that we do have a sign-up sheet. I'm going to put it, I'll just hand it to somebody and we can, float it around and we'll have a couple more names for the open mic portion. I'm going to introduce Tariq Luthoun. He's a Detroit-based Palestinian community organizer and data analyst. He's also an Emmy Award-winning poet, and he still lives in Detroit. He earned his MFA in poetry from the Program for Writers at Warren Wilson College. He's also the editor of the Micros at the Offing. If you guys have never read Micros, please do so. Go to the Offing website. It's a great publication. And his work has appeared in Vinyl Poetry, Lit Hub, Mizna, Winter Tangerine, Button Poetry, among others. Please welcome Tariq up to the mic.
Hey, y'all. How y'all doing? Y'all good? If you want, you can feel free to move up closer. I will not spit on you from here. It's pretty far. Can we do something real quick, though, before I get started? Let's do this first. So can everybody stand up? If you can stand up. It's kind of late in the day. I had a milkshake that kind of messed me up. And so, I like to get, the energy going by having some kind of affirmations. So we can all say, I'm alive!
I'm alive!
I'm enthusiastic!
I'm enthusiastic!
I'm happy to be here! Even if you're not. I'm alive!
I'm alive!
I'm enthusiastic!
I'm enthusiastic!
I'm happy to be here! If you all would like, since you're standing up, and you can, feel free to come up a little bit closer. I think open mics, performances, shows should be a collective conversation, not just like a lecture. So feel free, if you want to come closer, please do. In the meantime, I wanted to take this time... You can sit down. take this time to acknowledge that we are on indigenous land. It's previously owned by the Anishinaabe. Yeah, I think it's really important because, especially as a Palestinian who is on a land that's been occupied, that was previously dictated or dedicated to Indigenous people, it's important to be mindful of like who we are currently occupying the land of at this stage. With that said, I also want to acknowledge that it's Juneteenth. Yasmin asked me to speak a little bit on this because I think I made an Instagram post this morning about it, which is basically slavery is not over. Slavery technically was ended by the Emancipation Proclamation in 1865, I believe, and then it wasn't actually fully told to all enslaved people until about 2.5 years later. And even with that said, there were people who, there was no infrastructure for people of color, or especially there was no infrastructure for black people, and so therefore in a lot of cases you had sharecropping and situations where people were then indentured to their former owners because they had no other way to make a living. And so is there really an abolition of slavery if people are still forced to kind of be fed by the white supremacist hands that were previously enslavers? So I think when we talk about, to this day and age, the prison industrial complex, a lack of funding for education, a lack of resources for people of color, specifically black people, slavery is not over. And so it's important for us to continue to acknowledge that and continue to fight against that to ensure that we're actually being allies and accomplices to a better world as opposed to just talking about it. So I just rambled through that, so I'm sorry for going really quickly about that. I don't know how much time I have. So with that said, yeah, we're on indigenous land. And slavery is not over. So let's be mindful of the ways in which we can combat that. Also, I didn't say this, but the reason why the prison industrial complex is bad is because a lot of prisons are privately owned and they have quotas to fill. And typically the way to fill those quotas is to target brown and black and brown people specifically to then fill those prisons and then make a profit. So long as profit is tied to imprisoning people, there's no rehabilitation there. But let's do some poems. This is super awkward because, like, also I don't live in Detroit. I wanted to clarify that I live in the suburbs now, so I'm bougie as fuck. Sorry for swearing. I live with my family. Technically, I'm not allowed to move out until I get married. I don't know if y'all have to deal with that. I've moved out many times. Like, they can't stop me, but it's free rent. So yeah, I'm gonna do some poems for y'all. I'm sorry for rambling. I haven't done a reading in a long time, mostly because it's the summer and I usually do things at schools and like universities are out for the semester. And also I've been trying to focus a lot on my personal health, which involves like being free to go to the gym and like sleep right, but not actually doing it. So yeah, we'll see how this goes. So I don't know what poems to do. What are y'all feeling? Just say some. Just shout some words out. I'll pick a poem based on that.
I'm enthusiastic.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All my poems are depressing. So what I like to do is I tell jokes between the poems to hopefully, like, lift you guys up, and then I crush your spirits. Or, if you want to look the other way, I crush your spirits and then bring you up with, like, self-deprecating jokes. Right? Yeah, but am I charming enough to, like, pull this off? Okay. So let's do... So let's do this. This is about me and my friend, because we are in Dearborn and this is where this happened. So maybe I'll tell you a story after this. Oh no, that's not the right poem. This. Nope. Okay. All right, here we go. So this is about my friend Hassan and I, and I'll tell you all the story after this. This is just a bad angle to read the poem. I'm just going to hold this if this is cool with y'all. Upon leaving the diamond, it catch 14 stitches at my left brow. We will never be more brothers than we were in the heat of that summer. The one in the park, when the bat newly painted in my blood lit my father to yell at all the kids playing baseball who know now the sound of men darker and from a different world. Hurt, ready, and loud. Our fathers and the off-white noise they let loose didn't help and might have made matters worse. I wake up in a room I do not recognize, its luminescence bouncing off the walls. I come to know this room, place I had never been, while you continue running circles around the neighbors, lest their tongues point towards our family's names, lest they, for the first time, bleed and, lest they, for the first time, see us bleed and think, pray. I rushed through that, y'all. I'm sorry. I'll slow down later. I also, like, I was looking at my screen, but I had memorized most of it, and I just, like, still misread the poem. So, yeah. Long story short, this was about a time where my friend taught me how to play baseball, so it was really ironic to have, like, two Arab American kids playing baseball. But also not, because, like, this is an Arab enclave. And so, I went to hold the baseball bat like this. And if you all know how baseball is played, you're not supposed to stand on the actual plate or with the bat this way, because that means the ball's going to hit you in the face. And so he told me, just, you know, let me take the bat and show you how to play. So he took the bat and told me to stand right behind him. And so he's like, you want to take the bat like this and then swing it back this way. And because I was right behind him, he knocked me out. But did not tell anybody he knocked me out. And so my dad came through, being the supportive Arab man that he is, and yelled at all the kids trying to find out who hit his son. So that was cool. So, you know, if you ever want to return an item to, like, a Walmart or some shit, have an Arab dad. Because he will fight for you so hard. Even if there's no receipt. I have so many stories, y'all. All right. So, I know there's no context here. I need to get better context. So, how many of y'all have parents trying to get you married? That's so cool. There's only, like, two of you. Usually, it's, like, six of you. I'm one of them. So my family does not think I'm a real person yet till I'm married. And so we're going to do a poem about that whole concept. So yeah, let's see. This poem is... So have y'all ever, like, done things you wouldn't normally do to, like, try to help your parents get you married? This is, like, such a novel concept. You're like, what is he talking about? What is this Arab Muslim culture? So I'm trying to find the poem. Dang. Oh, here we go. Cool. So, I typically believe in, like, nasib. If anybody knows what that means, it's the idea that thing, what's meant to happen will happen. Like, you know, don't push things, don't force things. And so, my family is very, very convincing, though. And so, there are times where I will give things chances I wouldn't normally give. So, for example, like, say you meet somebody at an event and you're like, you know what? I may never see you again. But we vibe so well. Let's just keep talking and see what happens. And so, you know, I give things chances I probably shouldn't have because logistically it wouldn't work out. So this is about the time I find myself in the direct messages of someone later found to be in Kuwait. Yeah, I slid into a girl's DMs from Kuwait. It was fun. It was great. I did not know she was there till after the fact. We're friends. It's cool. There is something to be said of culture. How I end up here. The simplest explanation might be that my father won't stop making jokes about how he can't wait until I get married so that he can be done with me. Perhaps, unknown to her, it is my mother's doing. Her aging pride would like grandchildren. Maybe it is our elders, that they seek a youth that the bodies can no longer possess. Or maybe our bodies seek to possess a youth that keeps us from becoming our elders. Each evening erupts a fight between my family and me, arguing about where my life is headed, battling over the places my body lands. I haven't settled down with a woman. I'm not sure I'd like to, and yet here I go, drenched in desire that isn't entirely mine. I've left so many times and so much to find what might come of flinging oneself into thirst, to drown in every possibility and learn if it's possible to emerge unscathed from its mouth. Also, I forgot to say this, y'all. At poetry events, music events, any kind of event, feel free to just, like, you know, practice snapping, do whatever you want to do to, like, kind of let the person know that you're feeling it or whatever, because, like, as I said, it's a conversation. So the way that crowds interact with performers is usually some kind of, like, onomatopoetic sound, because that way, you know, keeps the energy flowing. So, you know, it's not like golf. Y'all don't have to wait to the end and be like... So just a heads up. I do a lot of, like, hosting of events and stuff like that, so I wanted to think about that and... You know, I don't want y'all to feel neutered. It's a conversation. I don't want you to be like, you know, if you want to boo me. So do what makes you happy. Just, you know, not with, like, violence, please. Any other words, y'all? Like, just throw some things out.
Can you do a love poem?
Oh, no. I don't believe in love. I'm joking. I have love poems. I just haven't. Yeah, I'll do one. Let's do one. It's a different kind of love poem. Okay. Portrait of my father drowning. It's a love poem. Portrait of my father drowning in the type of love he deserves. Nestled in his lap, a young me is learning how to swim. I flounder in water that is only knee deep while fully dressed on the pool's edge. My mother records the lesson. Blood will always be outweighed by the body of water it wades into. Earth itself, I realize, is just a body of waters. Years later, I spend a summer patrolling a different pool's edge.
I lose count of how many sons are held by their fathers, large and calloused hands buoying their lineages, these islands and their fluttering limbs. So that poem was actually recently published in a magazine called Crab Orchard Review, and it was really like important for me because especially with Father's Day passing and just thinking about the ways in which like I think there is often animosity between men and their fathers and men and their sons. Especially when we consider, you know, being Arab Americans, growing up in this country, growing up in like this kind of culture clash, it's important to be mindful of the layers of nuance. So I may have like discrepancies with my father, but at the same time, I have to be mindful of the fact that he is a man who grew up in an open air prison in Gaza. He moved to America, moved to the States. And so while there may be things that I have frustrations with and he has frustrations with me for, I try to be mindful of nuance and the mindfulness of that we are people. And so this is, I guess, kind of like an advertisement for calling in rather than calling out. But, you know, at the same time, if somebody's really harming you and like consistently shows harm to you, you don't have to like forgive that if it's really truly violence being committed against you. So there's levels to this stuff. I think I have time for just like one more poem. I'd do more if y'all want me to, but I feel like we have to go home. So I'm on Instagram if you want to follow me. I'm on Twitter. I have a Facebook. I also have a book coming out next year, so if y'all want these poems, so you can read them without me rushing, feel free.
Where can we pre-order it?
There's no pre-order yet, but you can sign up on my website or just like DM me. I don't think DMs are that weird. Like I think there's this connotation, like this like intimate conversation. Like really, y'all, like we're in the digital age. It's how we do work. I get like half my shows are booked through the DMs, so it literally means direct message. Okay, so any other words y'all want before so we can close this out?
Pain.
That's like half the whole book. Give me like other filtration words.
Triumph.
Okay, I like these words. Any other words?
Mindfulness.
They're so vague. You're just saying things I said. Let's do this poem. I like this one. All right. Enough. So, yeah, I'll thank you for putting up with me and for listening and for being here in the first place. Thank you for moving seats if you did. I appreciate that. And for, like, humoring my affirmations. Otherwise, yeah, thanks for having me. And I'll be sitting over there watching you all. So, not in a creepy way, though. In a friendly way. Ode to Arab child on an airplane for the first time. I don't remember if I too was afraid, but I do remember when the sky was our thing. I could say the word fight. Excuse me. Let me start this over. I'm sorry. I don't remember. Let's start the whole thing over. Okay. This microphone's. I don't usually do things in front of podiums, so I'm just going to keep making excuses. Ode to brown child on an airplane for the first time. I don't remember if I too was afraid, but I do remember when the sky was our thing. I could say the word flight. And in its stead, none would hear the word fight spill from my jaw. The last time it took a punch, I was in the boys' bathroom, surrounded by boys as a boy unleashed his fist into me. I returned the favor into his gut and ran. Moments before, he had called me gay, but I wasn't sure why I had to defend my glee, scarce as it was. Hours later, a mess of tears ran through me as I was pulled from gym by the principal and suspended for defending what little parts of myself I could still call mine. I don't know why this is the story I choose to tell. But I do know that I may forget it once we take off, shedding the skin everyone fears of releasing towards the sun. Beautiful, isn't it? To be able to leave behind this world, its lost and angry boys. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Tadek, for that. That was amazing. Okay, now we're going to do the open mic portion. First, we have Ali Al-Thiri. So please welcome him up to the mic.
Wait, good evening. All right. This one's called Leave Me Here. Take me back to that wonderful place called love. That is what I could have said, but stopped myself because you were the one that didn't say it back. I'd let you in every time. I'd let you eat with me. And the same table that we discussed the things that didn't work out, but never the things that could have easily turned my day into a better one. You stayed up with me when I was sick, even though I had no signs of sickness and no ability to realize that it was all in my head. You see me nervous and out of breath, but instead you told me to keep going. I never could look you in the eye, even though I knew the truth that could, for the life of me, save me. You were that plant. Let me be specific. That cactus. So good to look at and can be, and can withstand water, being without water. But I knew that I couldn't reach out to you. Sunsets. You made seem like the most beautiful scenes and then decide to suffocate me with your arm of doubt around my neck. And you kept telling me how good I am and not being good enough. You made me realize that without you, I could never move forward in my successes because they are not mine to keep. So you tell me you need them back because they are creations that you, that I should not be confident about. You hovered over me. When you said that you were confident in me to make a fraction of a decision that could take me to a better place, you locked my mouth shut. When I needed to defend myself from the harm of the pellets that come from the mouths of those that manifest their envy, ocean. Remember when you said the ocean was my downfall because all of the dreams that I worked hard for and make true are nothing but subtle whirlpools of immaturity. Take me back to that wonderful place called love. Were you ever going to take me there? Does it even exist? Does it fall between an intersection that I may have passed 10 times, but your manipulation has been pristine every time? Take me back to that wonderful place called love. Has that place been only you? Is it your house? Is it an alleyway that holds the graffiti so explicit that keeps those lines of my anxiety out of order because you never figured out how to make a house a home? Leave me here. With this watch so I can tell time, so I can wake up on the right side of the bed next to the empty water bottle that I already pissed because I woke up 20 times. Just leave me here. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ali, for sharing with us. I'm not very good with technology, this shows. But yeah, okay, our next sign up on the open mic is Adam Mortada. Please give him a warm round of applause.
Thank you.
It's too tall. So I haven't read anything since high school. I don't write poetry, I write prose. This isn't actually titled. This is just something I came up with. I went through a breakup about 4 months ago, and I just wanted to kind of get all my feelings out on paper. Going back to what you said about kind of being forced to go get married as I turn 30, it's something that I get bothered about every day. It comes in waves. Slowly, when I'm keeping busy, so the idea of you leaves my mind, shifting steadily at the bottom of my soul, enough to feel it, but not enough to wash me away, enough to remind me that the memories of you are fresh, bitterly cold, and still there. When the silence takes over, the waves build, slowly, steadily flooding and filling every crack and crevice within my soul, thoughts churning, emotions crashing against each other, till I am overwhelmed and I start to give away. What if, could have, would have, and every other doubt and angle. They overtake my breath and I struggle to break above. The storm that once saved me is the same one that threatens to drown me now. A monsoon of self-doubt, self-hatred, blame, and idealization of the past all in one. A past that I must abandon, but desperately cling to, like it is a raft that'll save me in the storm of your departure. Every breath comes with a recollection of every thought, every memory, always of you. The lightning offers bolts of clarity, moments of light that show just how fucking bad you were for me. That's my saving grace, but it's only for a moment, because the darkness returns. I sit, cold and alone, weathering the torrents of emotions until it passes. I love you still, despite the drowning, despite the danger. I still see you vividly when I close my eyes and hold my breath. Waiting for the next wave to crash and break. I can still hear you in the wind, howling and blowing fiercely with the passion that once filled the sails of my life. You are the storm, but I am the water. Your fury and passion will pass with time, distancing yourself further away and moving on to the next body of water. My waves turning eventually back into ripples, till the thought of you is written in the history books as a Category 5 that forever changed the landscape of my life.
So one of my favorite things about open mic is people being able to come up here and speak their truth or, you know, talk about things. Like, this is an open, safe space. So thank you, Adam, for using the space in that way. It made me really, really happy. Our next sign up is Zach Jawahar. Please give him a round of applause.
Yeah, I'm going to need the laptop just in case. Your laptop?
Yeah,
for sure.
That's cool.
Okay. Bad technology.
Does
anybody want to help? Is the community?
Yeah.
I can connect it for you directly.
Yeah.
Okay. Is it ready?
Yeah.
Okay. You can take it off. You can.
How's everyone doing today? Good.
Okay. It's just the beat and tell me if
yeah. So just a little backdrop, I'm going to be performing a song titled Drug Dealer. This is a song I made to kind of like, you know, just create a sense for, you know, a message to people who are struggling with drugs. And that's something that I personally struggled with in the past. And I think it's so important to put that out there. So through this song, I actually, I kind of, you know, did it in a way where people can listen to it and kind of see how it is. For someone who is struggling with drugs and someone who's going through all that. I think it's so important to, as a musician, put yourself out there as someone with a, you know, good message. I think it's cool to have hype and all, but at the end of the day, you know, if there's a message within the music, I think that's so important, so. Yeah. Deception filled with evil and games, or is that just my perception? And struggle through the pain, was I living not a dream? Am I trying to reach for fame? And racism is extreme, they say Trump's the one to blame. Gotta speak up with your voice, you can't just say your name. No chance, this was a choice, now look at what you became. Goes about life to live, makes drug deals. Just left his own wife, not for food he gotta steal. He held up a knife that thought it was so real. Then he thought of afterlife, suddenly that shit didn't appeal. It was all up to him, either to stay or make a change. Every thought of his was dim, on his part it left a stain. He was gonna have to swim to cover up all his pains. The balance put on a limb, felt his life was in domain. started off slow, but now the world was in his hands. No doubt he was at a low, but growing, that was his plan. Expelling his thoughts, now the growth that had began. Suddenly lost all of his hope, started reaching for the Zan. His heart began to beat, not slow, but with some speed. His life was incomplete, drug selling just to proceed. Bulk of goals he didn't meet, and to God he began to plead. All the times put in defeat, no wins, just selling weed. No wins, just selling weed. No wins, just selling weed. That's it. Thank you guys so much for hearing me out. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for that, Zach. I'm so glad that the space is being used for artistic expression and for like trying to highlight things that we don't really talk about in the community, like drug use and breakups and, you know, sliding into DMs. This is the last person that's on the sign-up sheet, but the sign-up sheet is still open. So if you feel inspired, you want to share something that you yourself have written or just thought about or something great about your day, just come see me over there and I can write your name down. So I'm going to introduce Reneem. Is it an H or an N?
Reneem.
Okay, yeah, I'm like, wait a second, my eyesight's bad. Okay, Reneem Omar, please give her a warm applause.
Thank you so much. Hello, everyone. How are you guys? All right, awesome. So my name is Reneem. I did this one time before, but I don't know if I'm still. I don't know how I feel, like, nerve-wise. Sometimes I get nervous, sometimes I don't. And but yeah, I just wanted to. I also wanted to say that a little background just about my poetry. I've been writing poetry my whole life, something I'm very passionate about. I'm passionate about music, too. That's another thing, but more like something that I've actually published and something that I've actually went through with is my poetry. And I think that I connect with pain a lot through my poetry, and I think that's what's beautiful about art in general is that it's almost this unspoken connection between, you know, the listener and the speaker. And I don't think that there's any healing that could ever be done if it weren't for connecting with your pain to begin with. And so this art just allows me to do that. And so I'm grateful for this space and this platform. And I'm also grateful that I get the opportunity to, you know, to share that and share that vulnerability and also be on the listening end of it because everybody's so talented. So yeah, you guys are all amazing. Yeah. So this isn't, I'm going to go ahead. This is not titled, so yeah. Sorry. I was 5 years old. I was not born scared, but the TV scared me. Why was Joe from Blue's Clues head so big? And why did his eyes follow me everywhere I went? I'd hide in the closet. One could never say I was born afraid of the dark. No, the dark is where I would find the most solace, and in the safest place was when my mom wasn't asleep and man-made objects weren't out to get me. And in my imagination, I could still be anyone, and myself was my favorite place to start. My sister, she had fallen asleep one time lying down on a stranger's bed. We grew up around strangers, I suppose. That's why we have learned to trust them, and why I love observing unfamiliar faces. In my eyes, everyone is my family. As I watched her, I remember feeling alone without anyone familiar to be awake with me and experience this with. But I did not wake her up. I just felt the feeling and never forgot it. It was my earliest memory of loneliness. It felt like the closet, except that was the day I never found a way out, but a trap door to another memory. My small body sat on the edge of my bed. My door, the explorer backpack lined with pink glitter, my most important possession, and it lay limp at one of the four corners of the pale yellow walls. I hated those walls, and I hated the feeling that I had. Unsettling in fear, tears were sprinkling, glittered on my face. I looked like my door, the explorer backpack, but not as lively. My dad had peered through the crack in the door. "Why are you crying, Habibi?" His voice etched with concern and a loving tone like he always spoke. The truth spilled from my child mouth so simply, the way I always spoke. "I don't want to go to hell," and the concern twisted into a painful kind. Now we're both anxious, and the walls are not helping, and I cannot tell my father, so devout, that if I loved God more than I feared him, I would end up there, and even crying about it became fear that glittered my father's face, too. Now he assumed the face of my backpack. And so, at the age of 5, in secret, I made a vow to myself not to trust in the things that scared me, and not to let the colors of walls affect my unsettlement, and to close closet doors when I fell asleep, because that's where I've placed my fears. Now and then, we'll get together once a month and catch up to reminisce on the days the dark was the safest place to hide. Thank you very much.
All right, last chance to sign up. Any takers? Anybody feeling brave or happy? Yeah, you'd like to come up? Awesome.
I gotta go find it first.
Sorry, guys.
Not prepared. What's up, y'all? I'm Stephanie. How are you at?
Hey, Stephanie.
What's up? So I have basically my whole life struggled with ongoing chronic severe depression and really high anxiety. I think those are really two common things that we find in young people nowadays in America, which is really sad because it's now becoming like an epidemic. But this one's kind of an homage to that. So just give me a second to find it.
So I watched it in let you know, guys, that the open mic is podcasted on your one blog podcast, so you can hear the whole thing, podcast all the previous sessions, and also it's individual videos will be uploaded on YouTube channel for D1 blog, and they will be posted on D1blog.com and all the associated media with its D1 blog tags for all of them.
Okay, I got it. Sorry. It's called, this poem is called It's Like a Sunny Day. I'm also getting over a cold, sorry. It's like a sunny day. Everyone around you is enjoying it. Smiles, laughter, basking, drinking it all up. But all you feel is burning. Pins and needles on your skin. You want to smile, but you just can't seem to. You form your lips into one, and you're exhausted from feeling everything and nothing all at once. Thank you.
Thank you so much for that, Stephanie. That was great. Okay, so now, without further ado, I'm going to introduce Zaina Berry. She's a Dearborn native singer-songwriter. She's self-taught. She plays piano and guitar. And you can check her stuff out on Spotify and SoundCloud. So please, welcome her up here.
Does it have a plugin?
No, no, it's fine.
Okay. You want to sit?
Sure.
No, because I got it. My guitar, unfortunately, doesn't have wings.
Here we go.
I'm shorter than usual. This should be fine.
Okay.
Yeah. Hi, everyone. My name is Zaina. I was born and raised here in Dearborn. Growing up, we touched on a lot of subjects that I think a lot of kids go through growing up here as immigrants or American-born kids that were raised by immigrants. And this not only affects you socially, but also mentally, emotionally, socially. And this is very reflective to my music. And there are many topics that are taboo in our culture, especially in Arab culture, which is mental health, drug use, identity, so many things like that. So sometimes it's very overwhelming. And this is a song that I wrote back in 2015, 2016. And it's about being lost in your mind and not really finding a way out of it and having an extremely difficult time figuring out if it's really you saying all of these doubtful things or if it's just your mind. And if you have gone through any dark thoughts, you get out to the other side, you will realize that it was just your mind at that point, and you don't have to identify yourself with those dark thoughts. They're just passing clouds, and it may seem easier said than done, but you really have to push through and go through the darkness and realize that it was in your head. So it's called Me and My Mind. It's been out for years. It's a case of circles, thoughts of doubt, a false of fire, it's always burning out. All these things I want to do, and I bet I'm so afraid. Lies in my little cage, too low to know where to begin. I feel this fire under the skin, so I lay here on the floor, with my back against the door. It's me and my mind, me and my mind, me and my mind, alone in my mind, me and my mind, me and my mind, me and my mind, alone in my mind. It's a weight so lonely, slow sinking ship, an old lie. I wish I could forget, say all these things I want to do it now, but I'm so afraid. Lots in my little cage, empty to get up and write a song and show the world just who I become. But I lay here on the floor with my back against the door. It's just me and my mind, me and my mind, me and my mind, alone in my mind, me and my mind, me and my mind, me and my mind, alone in my mind. It's a me, 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 oh, oh, my mind. My mind is a me, me, baby, oh, oh, my mind. My, see, I try to run away, hide behind the bay, but it always finds a way to come back for and leave me hanging there with no way out, out, ooh, ooh, ooh. just being alive, being alive, being alive in my mind, me and my mind, me and my mind. I'm going out of my mind. Tell me, is it me or my mind? Is it me or my mind? I'm going out of my mind. Is it me, me? Is it me or my mind? Thank you. This next song is a song that I wrote many, many years ago, but it's so strange the way life works. It's become really a song that I think was meant for this next person that's going to be singing, rapping with me. You heard some of it, of his work earlier, Mr. Zach ZJ. Come on down. So, yeah, ZJ. So, New Skin, I wrote a long time ago as well, about wanting to break away from my surroundings. I also graduated from Fortson High School. Yay! So entering college and entering the whole Dearborn scene, I never fit into the Dearborn scene. I have like two friends that live in Dearborn. The rest are just my cat and my music friends. But I never really found home in the Dearborn American kind of crowd, because that's its own species. And it's funny that we touched on so many identity issues today of trying to correlate American culture with Arab culture, but there's a Dearborn culture that I even ostracize myself with. I don't really think I fit in with much of anything, although I do find home in what my soul needs, and that's music and good company and things like that. So New Skin is about wanting to break away from your surroundings, your mentalities, and adopted ideas that you've kind of outgrown or don't resonate with your soul. And you're just like, I really need some new skin. I don't like living in these pores that are sinking all these things in. Like, bye, I don't like this. So we do have a track to it. It sounds really weird on guitar, so I think we should just do something really spontaneous and just do yeah.
And I'm doing this because
one of the poets mentioned earlier, you on your phone, hey you, you mentioned that this is a space where you can make noise and do what you want, so I figured let's do it. So we're gonna do New Skin. It is going to be on the album that he's gonna feature on. Stay tuned for that. It'll be out soon. And I hope you enjoy and I hope you like. It's called New Skin. Can I get some snaps? As a tempo. Yeah, of course. You have to. A vacuum, these faces are seeing this everyday dream, this push, this pull to be something else. This talk about settling constantly hanging over me. I'm in need of a change, a new face, a new touch to feel under this skin. Yay, a new skin. Yeah, a new skin, yeah. A new skin to feel the soul underneath, yeah. A new skin, a new skin, now. Hey, a new skin, now. Hey, a new skin, yeah. I said these are us, oh, false belief that everyday misery, all that's out inside of me, taking over. See, I'm in need of a change, a new face, a new touch to feel under the skin. Yay, a new skin, yeah. A new skin, yeah. A new touch to feel under the skin, yeah. no skin in it now. Hey, I no skin in it now. Hey, I no skin in it now. I no skin, yay. Na 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 na.
Yeah, new skin, a youth from within, a positive vibe with a negative 10. I see the light flow as I look deep within. The mask comes off, 180 degree spin. Only 21, yet feel so much negativity. Society's a menace, I still haven't found a remedy. Changes all around with so much negative energy. But I'ma stick to an angle, let the hate get to me. Judge or be judged, either way, once was sin. A big life change, set a big life spin. From living on the road to the very next end. But I changed for the better, cause I got that new skin. I got that new skin, wear it on with great pride. Accept all the love I could get, that's the guide. Thick or thin skin, either way, I feel a vibe. Feel the warmth from inside, emanated worldwide.
Yay, I know skin, yeah. I know skin to feel the soul underneath, yeah. I know skin in it now. Hey, I know skin in it now. I know skin in it now. I know skin. Hey, I know skin. Yeah. And that's how we used to do open mics back in the day before they invented guitars. I hope you enjoyed this. Thank you, Arab American National Museum, for giving this outlet to all of us kids here in Dearborn and all of the craziness that goes inside of our heads. Thank you for creating a safe space for all of us to just feel safe enough to speak. Thank you, Yasmeen, for everything. There's only two, Miss Nancy.
You told her three.
I just said that same song.
Whoa, drama. Thank you everyone for coming to Dearborn Open Mic. We're here at the library at the Arab American National Museum every third Wednesday of the month. Come next month, tell your friends, come through, share your feelings, share your truths, sign up, DM me if you want to be showcased. And thank you guys so much for coming. It was a great evening.
Yeah, I'm so talented. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Yeah. That's exactly what mine is, really.
Really good book about that. Kind of foreshadowing.